are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolli right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever on this Thursday, July 18th?
Yes. What did you say, Michael? 172nd show?
That's correct.
Is that what it is for us?
Yeah.
Wow.
But who's counting?
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems like only
this is
three years ago.
Yes, it was.
This
exactly
is the beginning of year
ago.
Yes. How you doing?
I'm good, sir.
Good,
and
good.
How are you, birthday boy?
I am very good.
Are
I'm
you?
Very good. Thank you. I had a chat away. I have to turn my headset on.
All right. I'll do that. Paul had a birthday yesterday. That's what we're talking about.
Yet another indication of my old age, that the hearing is going. I told you I went from no glasses
right.
I just turned 49. And I went from no glasses on my 46th birthday. Uh-huh. The very next day, I needed a German Shepherd. I don't know what happened.
What?
I went right from nothing to bifocals and just like, it's a fast crash with the vision and the hearing.
I know. Look at me. I'm wearing them too. So,
yeah, but you always wore glasses, didn't you?
No.
Oh,
only
really?
Since the last, 5 years or so. The
thing
is just,
yeah, the computer
kills
will do
you,
it. Yeah, the
right?
computer will do it, among
and
other
it's
things.
It's something we have to live with. So.
Yes. Walkmans to thank for my lack of hearing and computers to thank for my lack of vision.
What a world, huh? We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge performingartslive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Yes, we are. And Paul, let me tell you a little something about our first guest today.
Okay.
She is perhaps best known for her stunning performance as Ava Perón in the first U.S. national tour and Chicago sit-down of Andrew Lloyd Webber's majestic Evita. But she's here today to discuss bringing her critically acclaimed portrayal of another famous lady to life, Norma Desmond, in Sir Weber's Sunset Boulevard, being presented by Musical Theatre West now through July 28th at the Richard and Karen Carpenter Performing Arts Center in Long Beach, California. Please welcome the ever lovely and oh so talented Valerie Perry.
Where's my
right there you are. Where's that audience?
Where's my applause?
There you go.
I mean, she
Valerie.
Brought all these people that can at least applaud on cue.
Absolutely.
So nice to have you in the
so
studio.
So nice to have you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you.
And
great
Paul,
you.
You'll tell the folks who are listening about our second guest.
I certainly will, and I hope I get his name right on the first try. Our second in-studio guest today has the enviable job of looking at Miss Perry. Is it Perry?
Perry.
You just said it,
but
I didn't remember.
In Paris.
Paris. Well, you're going to be Paris from now on. Looking up at Miss Perry during every performance of Sunset Boulevard, while he is, as one critic said, muscularly musically directing a 21-piece orchestra.
What?
I don't know. I just read what they give me.
He's with muscle, David.
Muscularly musically directing a 21-piece orchestra that thrills with the intricate and lush score by Andrew Lloyd Webber, which last week kicked off the West Coast's 20th anniversary revival of what became a motion picture classic in 1950. Please say hello to Sunset Boulevard's Boy Wonder musical director, David Lamoureux.
Oh,
yes?
My goodness. Yes.
Yes.
You're right on the money.
I was going to say David Perry, just to keep the joke
hey,
going.
It's
David,
a French last name,
yeah,
so
I was
with
say
the mispronunciation
yeah,
words,
at least
I think
at least I didn't go Lamorex, which I'm sure. Is it live or is he Lamorex, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, wow, that's kind of cute.
Come
yeah,
on,
in France, they yes. say it.
Yeah.
Perry
Lamoureux.
For Bowery.
Lamoureux, it's a French? Yeah.
It
what,
is.
What's the origin of Perry?
Well, actually...
Perry,
It's not my real name.
It's not your real name.
Yeah.
So the origin is Hollywood.
So I had a casting director. In fact, it was the casting director for Grease.
That we discussed.
That we discussed in the other room. Yeah. He asked me my maiden name, and I said, it's Valerie Climo. And he said, change it.
That's a good one, though, because it's one of those ones that's just, it doesn't sound, it sounds like a name. It doesn't sound affected or any sort of highfalutin or not like,
How was that spelled? With a?
It's with an I. It's P-E-R-R-I, which is, very different than most, since they use the Y. But it does get confusing to some people. Most often they do call me Paris. But I kind of like it.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, as long as it's a made-up name, yeah. It's a made-up pronunciation.
And in France, it works, you know.
That's right.
Right? So how was your week
before we chat with these lovely people?
Well, thank you for asking. It was good. It was all really, you know, very exciting because of getting being associated with Musical Theatre West, as you know that I am, on this production of Sunset Boulevard. The anticipation, as everyone can attest to, of getting, and you know this as well, Paul, being the fine actor that you are, getting something open and finally up, and opening night comes around, and the critics are in the audience is sitting there, you know, with such anticipation, and it really came full circle.
Oh, that's great.
On the 13th of July, on our press night, and continue to do so throughout the weekend, and of course there's performances coming up throughout July 28th. So that was where my main focus was, and also with another show that's getting ready to open here in Los Angeles later this month, and we'll talk about that on another show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about that little, you know, getting the show open, and we were discussing before the show went on the air about the sort of distinctly L.A. thing about how it's you get a little bit of a break after you open, because so many of the productions out here are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're weekend loaded rather than, you know, New York or Chicago, where you start, you know, you sometimes start on Tuesday, but sometimes you start on Wednesday, sometimes
you start
on Thursday.
But and speaking of getting a break, we have someone that's going to join us today.
Yes, we do. We do.
And we're excited to have him here. And, Paul, you're going to make a
I will make the phone call, but
yes,
you want to give
The
listeners a little intro?
Yes, absolutely. This is not only a friend of mine, but also happens to be co-starring, lucky guy that he is, co-starring opposite Valerie Perry in Sunset Boulevard. And he is no stranger to the musical theater stage, of course, having appeared in Wicked as Fiero on Broadway, and also the U.S. national tour of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, having replaced Donny Osmond in that particular event. And also in Light in the Piazza, he was the love interest in Fabrizio in the U.S. national tour of that.
Yeah.
So
he's done very well for such a homely man. You know, for such a hard guy to look at, he's done very well.
Easy on the peepers, as they say.
All right, I'm calling him right now, so hopefully he will pick up. I hope he knows that he's live on the air as soon as he picks up the phone, but we'll find that out.
His name is David Burnham.
And his name is David Burnham, and we will see if he's at the ready. This is one of our the joys of
it. Hello?
Hello, this is State of the Arts, and we're looking for David Burnham. Have we reached you?
You have.
Hey, David, how are you? Great to chat with you again. We had you on the show once before. What was the production that David was on when... Oh, no, it was his performance at Sterling's.
That's right, he was headlining at Sterling's upstairs.
That's right. And now you're doing Sunset Boulevard, and we have some of your cohorts here with us today. How you doing?
Oh, doing great. Getting ready to do some more Sunset Boulevard this weekend. I'm so excited. It's been... kind of a really once-in-a-lifetime experience, I think. It's just been an amazing, amazing journey. We're having a great time. Hi to you guys out there.
Hi, David.
Hey, David.
Valerie is here with us, David, and David Lemereau is here with us as well. So we wanted you to be a part of this, so thank you for joining us today. So let me ask you something, David. You put a lot of work, obviously, into a show that is a very grand production, as did everybody on the stage as performers, and certainly the creative team involved, Larry Rabin and David Lamoureux and John Todd handling the staging of the show. What was, when that curtain came down on opening night, what was your reaction personally to yourself? Were you, I'm joyfully glad that it had happened? I mean, you must have been, because it was an amazing performance.
Well, there was an instant elation, definitely. I mean, just the fact that it's such a huge, huge piece, and to undertake it in just 2 weeks to kind of put this whole thing together,
there was
a real sense of accomplishment. I mean, I think that, wow, it all came together, and magically we had this beautiful show, and I think everybody was doing such good work and at the top of their game. It felt like everybody really approached it seriously and as a serious piece and as a... It was pure elation. I mean, I was just so thrilled with every aspect of it.
And I also think that one of the things that is responsible for it being such a wonderful evening of theater is the the cohesiveness of the creative team and Larry Rabin's insight on this show, and taking something that was actually, you know, prevented this show from being done very often throughout the past 20 years, if at all, was because it was such a very expensive production
sure,
to do.
Yeah,
and set
yeah.
was,
sure.
And the set was actually
well,
kind
was,
of the star, wasn't
but
it?
But I was, yeah, what I was so amazed with is how great everyone worked together. For instance, kudos to David Lamoureux for, I mean, the whole thing is sung through. So he's down there conducting for a solid 2.5 hours, and it never stops. The music just never stops. And this music is hard. I mean, it's some tricky stuff. So David, hats off to you, man. I mean, his guidance in the musical direction was so thoughtful and skillful and insight. He had such great insight into the characters that it wasn't just about learning notes. It was about crafting these characters and finding out how they sing and how they approach each song. And so, at Larry Rabin as well. He's so smart and gifted as a director, and he just guided us every step of the way in such a gentle and loving way. But at the same time, he had a firm vision as to what he thought the show should be. And it was just a joy to work with this team. And of course, my co-star, Valerie Perry, who inspires me every night to be better and better because she's just breathtakingly amazing.
And beautiful.
Yes. And it's Perry, by the way. I didn't want to correct you, but we're making a joke here because I keep mispronouncing her name. But she spoke very, even before we were on the air, she spoke very highly of you. So
well, David,
nice,
your performance was masterful, to say the least, and continues to be through the next couple of weeks. And thank you so much for taking some time out and talking with us. And we look forward to seeing you.
Bye.
And everybody out
My
there.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
David, thank you for joining us. We're very grateful.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right,
bye.
Buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Such a lovely guy, isn't
nice
he?
Nice we could chime in with him. It was nice.
Yeah.
On the amazing
very
electric
nice
telephone.
Man. Yes.
But let's talk to the ones that are here with us.
Absolutely.
Give this beautiful woman her due. Aside from her acclaim as Ava Perone and now her newfound fame as Norma Desmond, our first guest has also dazzled in such Broadway blockbusters as Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Story, Gypsy, Annie, and City of Angels. If only there were some people have heard of, yeah. And to name but a few. She's also lit up the screen in Criminal Minds, ER, and Another World, worked with such luminaries as John Travolta, Goldie Hawn, Steve Martin, as if that's not enough. She also headlines in concerts worldwide and is happily married and the mother of two 21-year-old twin boys, which looking at her, you'd never know that could be possible. How does she do it? We're going to find out right now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Valerie Perry.
Oh.
Hello.
Well, we're out of time, but thank you so much.
Can I take that with me everywhere I go? That applause. That's great.
The applause of the intro. It's a great intro,
yeah,
Michael.
The intro
I tell you, that would make a wonderful tattoo. Let me just tell you, that'd be a good thing.
That'll
to
be
carry
my
with
next
you.
Bio in all my programs.
How are you?
I'm terrific.
You must
terrific.
Be very, very excited to hit the boards again, given what we were talking about. That little bit of break. I mean,
yes.
It's nice to have the break, but also you just want to. If you're anything like me, you just want to get back out there. I imagine
absolutely,
you're feeling that way.
Absolutely. It's like I said to you before in the green room. Oh. The first night, you're grateful to have the time off. The second night, you go, oh, okay, well, I can find something to do, maybe a movie or whatever. The third night, you go, okay, it's time to go back and
yeah,
do this.
Yeah, let's go.
I want
let's
to remember
go.
This on the weekend.
Yeah.
But, yes, I'm very excited to get back out there and be with this company again. This is an incredible company from top to bottom.
And
everyone.
You know, Paul, she's a class act because she's sitting here with the three of us guys
yeah.
who are all unshaven
yeah.
and very casually dressed. And
some of us intentionally, some of us just lazy.
Yeah.
And, I didn't want to say anything. I won't mention anyone. I'll just look at the party and whistle. Anyway, so
she arrives like the star that she is.
But
like,
she does. She raises the bar. She
yes,
raises
she
the
does.
Bar. This is probably a question you've gotten before, but
sure.
Looking through your credits and stuff, and when you know the Norma Desmond role, obviously, and the Ava Perone role, is there? I mean, along with the other ones, is there a favorite of yours? Does one stand out as a favorite, or is everyone new? I mean,
yeah, it's kind of like whatever I'm doing at the time because
it's what
my
you,
favorite
is what you love the most. Okay,
but yeah. Evita will always be extremely special because it was a dream come true working with Hal Prince and meeting Andrew and Tim and just the whole Cinderella story of it.
Wow.
You told me an interesting story, Valerie, over the weekend, this past weekend, about having done that, and then when the tour was over, and then you went into an off-Broadway show, and then you got a call from the young lady that was doing Ava on Broadway. Tell us that story.
It's kind of like it's a sad story for me, only because.
But it's an interesting story,
and it comes from the time that I had left the tour. I had been doing the show almost 3 years. I had started here in Los Angeles as the alternate at the Schubert Theater, which meant I did all the matinees, and I would go on if the principal, who was Lonnie Ackerman at the time, couldn't make it. And within a few months, Hal and Tim and Andrew came and saw my show and offered me to go into Chicago. So I had been in Chicago for a full year, sit-down company, and then we started to tour. And by the time I was done, it was about 3 years, and I decided to go into this off-Broadway show at Manhattan Theater Club. And we worked on the show a few weeks, and it just kept having so many problems. And the director ended up getting fired. And it was, we were like right at that tender time where we were about to open. And I got a call from she was my best friend, Lonnie. She still is a really good friend of mine. And she said, listen, you know I'm pregnant. And I said, yes. And she said, I'm having a real hard time getting through the balcony scene without getting dizzy. So the Prince office wants to ask you to come in and take over the role here on Broadway. So I said, oh man, I said, this is such a hard decision. I mean, I really want to do it, but how can I walk away from this project right when it's ready to open? It's just my integrity won't let me do that. I don't want to disappoint anybody. So I said, I'm going to have to say no. And then what ended up happening was the show that I was doing, like 5 days before we were ready to open, one of the other cast members got a call to do a replacement for Amadeus. And she just walked away and did her role, you know. And I felt kind of stupid in a way. but I think the worst part of it was, because it was having such a hard time and they lost the director and Martin Charnin stepped in to, you know, save the show, they just had so many technical and creative problems in fighting and all kinds of stuff that Lynn Meadow, who was running Manhattan Theater Club, came in and said, we're not going to open the show to critics. We are just going to run our course and we're going to start working on the show so that we can bring it to New York. Because it was always bring it to Broadway. It was always that anticipation of it coming to Broadway. So in any case, it was one of those things that by the time that closed, it was a crazy New York time, and Evita didn't last much longer after that, so I couldn't go in to the show, and it was a real hard time for me. I mean, it was a really tough journey to go from having such an incredible high profile with Evita and then nothing, you know. And it took me a good year or so, because every role that I would get sent up for, you know, casting people would go, oh no, she's Evita, she's too strong to play that. And it became a real problem. And you know, I tell the story that when I opened Evita in Chicago, Hal Prince had come to me and he said, you know, playing this role at your age is going to be both a blessing and a curse. He said, it's obviously one of the most magnificent roles for any woman in musical theater and the most challenging. He said, and I was at the young point of it. Patty and Lonnie and Elaine Page were all older than I was, so I was starting in as the youngest Evita. But of course, the curse was that he said to me, there's not going to be any roles that you're going to be able to do after this until you're much older that's going to have this kind of weight. And so he was right. He was right. I mean, I did some absolutely wonderful roles, like you said, on, you know, in Broadway shows and television and film, but nothing that tapped me the way Evita did until now. until
well,
Norma.
Well, you know, and the thing is that that's sort of, it's blessing and a curse, but, you know, where do you, you know, when you, I always think of Peter O'Toole's first film being Lawrence of Arabia. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right. Like, where do you true go right from, you know, when you're lucky enough, not lucky enough, because it's obviously ability, it's not luck, luck's of course a factor. But I want to comment on something that you said earlier, because you said you felt very stupid. You know, you said you felt stupid about it. But the thing is that, I mean, of course, how you felt is you, but what I take from that story more is just such a wonderful sense of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Character, I love the quote, character is what you do when no one else is looking. Mm. And that's really what that is. It's just, you know, no one has a crystal ball. No one knows that another person in the cast is going to do the ethically opposite thing that you did. And, you know, I mean, while it was certainly, you know, unfortunate for how you were feeling, I would be far more inclined to take that memory of doing the right thing for yourself as a performer than, you know, what followed, because I think that's what people, that's what I'm going to
do. No, I totally agree with you.
I thank you for
that. Well, I think, quite frankly, and I mean this sincerely, and Valerie and I have not known each other for more than just a couple of weeks here, but and that's at best and very little during that time, but she is a woman of integrity. You can see that. You can feel that, just her very essence when she walks into a room, when she walks onto that stage. It's all about that with you, really. And you are a lady to the nth degree, and obviously quite wonderful at what you do.
Speaking of that, let's tell others how they can go see it so they can enjoy
absolutely
this thing, if I have this right. This is at Musical Theater West at the Richard and Karen Carpenter Performing Arts Center. That's 6200 East Atherton Street in Long Beach. And, of course, I say this every time, Michael. I know I say it every time, but I still can't believe how they got this URL, musical.org. musical.org, very, very easy to remember. And this is playing through Sunday, July 28th, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And also, you can call the box office if you like to, and that's 562-856-1999, extension 4, but we will obviously throw that information out
there.
And
I'm going to say something. That box office is run like a... I don't know what. I've never seen anything run so well. And Michael Betts is the man that runs that box office, and he is truly amazing.
And that is
gentleman
saying
to
something.
Work with.
That is saying something, because I tell you, there's nothing I hate more when you call the box office and they act like they're doing you a favor by answering the phone.
This guy is at your
like
beck and
call. I'm calling
call.
You.
Yeah.
I'm a customer.
I'm
calling you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And speaking of box offices, thank you to the box office of Pantages, who is setting us up with some tickets
that's
to see
right
Sister Act. Benny Aguayo, very grateful to Benny for arranging
thank you,
that
Benny,
for us. While we're praising box, not that he's box office.
You and your
PR,
wife and your niece.
Yes, my lovely niece.
Who
my lovely niece, Damaris. Whenever one of our nieces and nephews turns 13, we fly them out to L.A. for like a five-day carry you around on a velvet pillow trip.
Oh, goodness.
It was a great idea until we realized we had to do it 21 times. So this is why Monica and I will not have a retirement fund. But we love having them, and Damaris is actually, Monica's picking her up from the airport
is
right
she?
Now. Yeah.
Exciting. I hope she enjoys Sister Act tomorrow night, because it's a fantastic show, as you know, folks. And we're having the star of Sister Act with us next week.
We are.
Yeah.
We are.
Yeah.
Valerie, I wanted to ask you something we have a lot of performers who listen to the show, and we touched on this in the other room, but, you know, are there any, like, to retain your voice? We were talking about double show days and double show days back to back. Is there anything in particular, it's not as simple as not speaking during the day, or, I mean, is there any particular thing that you do? Is it just good training that you're not risking
technique
so much? It's just technique.
I think that's number one, technique.
Okay.
Anything else, really, I mean, it's just being smart about it. You know, not going out and drinking and all the fun stuff that you do.
Yeah.
you kind of have to be in training with a role like this.
Well, you're rarely off stage. You know, you and David both are there.
And he even more so. He has to go from my world to the other world with Betty in it too. So he's got a tough.
Yeah. Well, tough it's clear that technique is everything in the case of something like this. Very demanding.
Absolutely. And steam. I love steam.
Steam helps.
Yeah, steam really is great.
Steam heat?
Steam heat. But I think it's more relaxing than anything, though. I love it. It just relaxes me. sometimes. But, yeah, I don't have any other rituals, really.
I saw an interview once with Tom Waits. And Tom Waits, who had Frank Sinatra's vocal coach for years. And they just went, they asked him outright. And they were like, Mr. Waits, have you taken steps to protect your voice? And he said, from what, vandals? I just love. like, this voice needs protecting. This voice is a Philco refrigerator being thrown down a fire escape, and gloriously so. I mean,
absolutely.
I just love that voice,
yeah.
But just always
very
love that
distinct.
Line. From what, vandals?
That's very
funny.
That's very funny. Paul, you have been an active theater goer.
I've been
this
an active
week.
Theater goer. Yeah, I got a little review to throw in here before we chat with David and continue to chat with Valerie. But there's a theater company in town called Theater Banshee, and they're doing, and the great group. I always enjoy their work, as you could probably tell from the title. They do Irish themed work primarily, but they're certainly not limited to that. This is the West Coast premiere of a work by Ronan Noon called Brendan. As I said, the tagline of the show is Becoming American. Sometimes what we leave behind doesn't stay behind. And it's a very, very touching and very funny take on a modern immigrant experience, which I found very interesting because there's so many plays and movies about sort of a nostalgic look at the experiences of immigrants, but this is sort of a modern take on it, which you don't get to see as often. Very everyman quality to it. I don't want to give anything away about the story, but very early in the show, very early, you realize that a family member back in Ireland, this gentleman's family member has passed, and the way that they integrate this into his formative experiences in this country is very smart. It's beautifully and elegantly theatrical, but it's never sentimental or cloying. It's just a great sort of convention, and the actress who played that role had a very, very thin wire to walk. Doing that, and she did it beautifully. Very strong ensemble. This is including Patrick Quinlan, who is excellent as the title character, and he has his work cut out for him because he's a very, very shy, sort of understated character, and he makes him consistently interesting, which was quite an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And excellent work from Kathleen M. Darcy, Katia Ojeda, I hope I get their names right, Katia Ojeda, and Devereaux Chumro. So there's a lot of French.
Can you say that one again?
Devereaux Chumro.
I like the way you say
that. If I have that right. The whole ensemble was strong, but the ladies were really brought it out in this one. It was a very, very, very strong cast. The staging was very inventive. It's a very small stage at the Banshee. Great implementation of a step ladder that they used in some of these things that gave not only a great visual effect, but sort of metaphoric function as well. There's something that took place in a courtroom, and they just put the judge up on the top of this stepladder. It was very shallow playing space, and it just visually worked very well. One little bugaboo about it, the set design was a little risky. It was implemented very well at one point in the show, which I don't want to give away because it's such a great visual, but it was a little busy for my taste, the background of it. It was sort of... shelves with INS boxes, you know, boxes with the immigration papers in them, and it was sort of looked like a storeroom, and I just didn't think it, for something that busy, it wasn't integrated as well as it could have been. But that's, you know, splitting hairs. It's very, very minor. It doesn't really affect the overall experience of the show at all. Really, really enjoyed it. And this is Brendan at Theater Banshee, as I mentioned. It's playing through August 18th, and Theater Banshee is at 3435 West Magnolia. Tickets 818-846-5323 or online at theaterbanshee.org. Theater is the R-E spelling. If you don't know how to spell Banshee, brush up on your Irish folklore, because that's your word. And if you do go over there, don't go to Porto's. I mean, Porto's is a great place.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying don't go there, not because it's good. It's always packed. Go three more blocks east and go to Pinocchio's Restaurant and Monte Carlo Deli. It's some of the best Italian food in town, and it's a great...
And you would know.
And I would know, because I'm a paisan, as you know. But really enjoy. Theater Banshee does great, great work.
Well, you know, they not only do great work, Paul, but weren't they the theater company who recently had a member that was... walking down the street and was attacked by someone physically beat up.
They were doing a show and he was mugged and he was brutally beaten.
Yes, and the theater
joined forces and raised money because being a struggling actor, he didn't have all the health insurance he should have, and they really rallied to his side. So there you go.
Well, I hope he's okay, and
great
group karma will come back to them for sure.
Exactly, great group of people. Theater Banshee on Magnolia, love that group.
Yeah.
So, but let's continue to talk about
Absolutely.
What we're talking about today.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. We referred to him earlier as a wonder boy, but
That's putting it mildly. Boy Genius is perhaps a more appropriate title to describe his extraordinary talent as a maestro of music. He not only conducts for Musical Theater West and their current unanimously critically acclaimed production of Sunset Boulevard, but is kept gainfully employed by other musical theater producing entities in Southern California, all while pumping up the volume of such Broadway scores as A Chorus Line, High Fidelity, Chess, Sweeney Todd, Rent, Into the Woods, Cats, Phantom, Joseph, and Annie. He is a multi-instrumentalist and has also performed and recorded with artists ranging from Gwen Stefani to Sandy Duncan. His talent knows no boundaries. Please welcome David Lamoureux.
Oh, well, thank you for such a gracious introduction.
A man brings a guitar in and throws it in the corner. We got to give him more than applause
now,
on that one.
I must comment on that for sake of transparency. That is not mine. I play nothing with strings. I had to drop my brother tours in the band I am playing with currently. We flew in this morning, and I didn't have time to transfer his bass to his car. I dropped his body off and drove to the studio.
Oh, okay.
So how loyal is that? As a guest, right? Came in from Boston, arrived here.
Yeah, no, you just arrived hours ago.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. Well, but then again, so I only left hours before that, technically, so I haven't been
gone. Have you had any sleep, Dan?
I slept on
the plane.
Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
But I'm going to sleep tonight. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for fitting us in, David. We're very grateful to have you here. I want to ask you something, because music to me has always been, I don't want to know the magic trick. I don't want to know the mechanics of it. I just want to go, and I love music. I know a lot about individual performers and all that, but I intentionally sort of keep the mechanics of it at arm's length, because I don't want to know that aspect of it. But I'm very curious about your job as a musical director, because I know how a singer, or I have an idea how a singer prepares, and I know how an actor prepares, I know how a stand-up prepares. But what is your process when you, I mean, it's not obviously as simple as just knowing the music. Is there anything you can do on your own, and how much does it change when you're presented with the cast that you're presented with?
Well, I'm in such a fortuitous circumstance right now, certainly dealing with the cast that I'm dealing with on Sunset Boulevard. With any show that I've worked on, I think there's certain, and really it applies to anything outside of the musical theater realm as well, determining figuring out a knowledge of the entirety of the material, but also figuring out why, at least how it speaks to me, why the material is written like it is, why it's structured like it is, and trying to find the stream of integrity through that makes it a cohesive piece and doesn't make it a matter of tackling a score that this song sounds like this, and these are kind of the gimmicky moments of this song that people have become accustomed to from a show's past or past performers that have been associated with it, and trying to get back to the text whenever possible, and any sort of recurring themes that really do serve a purpose other than just being a recycled bit of music. Okay. If I can come into a project feeling comfortable about that knowledge, then it's a really level playing field to start working on it and collaborating it with the people involved, and really going too much more into my opinion of deliveries and what have you about certain elements of a score prior to meeting and working with the cast, I haven't found to be particularly beneficial, because I know that it closes my mind to some ideas that are presented that I never would have thought of, and certainly with a cast as dynamic and compelling and inspiring to work with as Valerie and David, and the rest of the principal cast is just staggeringly talented, between Norman Large and Ashley Fox Linton and Jeff Scowron and the rest of the company. I mean, everyone's come at it, and for a 2-week rehearsal process, certainly with such a level of commitment to.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. Just
and you know, something else too that I think is wildly apparent in David's talent, and for me, and I go to the musical theater, quite often. So, and I pay attention to who's in the pit and who's conducting and what that orchestra sounds like, whether it's at the Pantages or the Amundsen or Musical Theater West or 3D Theatricals in Fullerton, wherever it is. But when this man is at the podium, honestly, and I told you this, David, the first time that I met you formally after a chorus
after
line
a
at
chorus
Musical
line,
Theater
yes.
West, that the orchestra, the sound that this man pulls out of this orchestra, and he's got 21 pieces
21
in
the
orchestra Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
Amazing. What regional theater company does that?
Well,
first
here.
Of all.
Right.
But with the chorus line, I think you probably had, what, around 18 or?
With the chorus line, we were at, I think we had 15 or 16
yeah.
for a chorus line.
So in and around that number. But it's like listening to the CD of the original Broadway score. I mean, it's so pure and so precise. And the added element of underscoring the dialogue in Sunset Boulevard is as important as the singing of the songs that the talent is doing. The marriage of the dialogue and the tonality of what's being said and his coaching with the actors of when and how to merge this with the music. Am I right?
Truly, yeah.
What a talent that is in itself, right?
Oh, thank you. I'm always with Musical Theater West, I value so much their commitment to not reducing the orchestra sizes out here. It's just been such a rampant... I mean, to call it a trend at this point really isn't, that's not the scope of
well,
it. It's
I think
becoming the universal reality.
Right. And we're going back to the word integrity here because that's what the theater has, integrity to present shows the way they should be presented.
Absolutely.
And there's long-term damage from that too because you start thinning out orchestras and what you have, especially for, you know, Los Angeles where it's hard enough to get people out to see live theater anyway. I mean, it's difficult everywhere, but it's especially difficult here in this car culture. Is that you start having people come out to thinner musical presentations, and they don't realize, but they get so used to seeing these pared down orchestras and thinned out orchestras that once they do see something where it's totally fleshed out and you have that bottom and you have those the 21 pieces. That people are like, oh, this is what we've been missing.
Yeah,
and that live experience you can't really. I mean, it's just. It's night and day.
The standard has certainly been adjusted. And the other impact on a more global level is that because of this stripping down, you see, such a large amount of new shows being written are written for such smaller amounts of players they have any shot at a livelihood beyond their original New York or L.A. or whatever their premier incarnation is. Right. I mean, or in some cases, even the recording, they'll get an orchestra in for the recording, and then every time you go see it live, it's two keyboard players and
maybe
a drummer.
Right, well, right.
Yeah. And speaking of keyboards, that's another very important element in this orchestra.
Yeah?
Yes.
As he takes a deep breath.
Wow.
There are four keyboards, am I correct?
There are four keyboards in Sunset Boulevard, and between those four keyboards, I believe there are there's like 30 shy of 1,000 patch changes in the show.
Now, for a layman like me,
absolutely.
What will a patch change?
So these keyboards are covering supplemental material to the rest of the orchestra. So it's mallet cues, like xylophone and vibes that aren't included in the orchestration, or at least in the incarnation that we're using. It's harp, it's string supplementation to augment. We have a gorgeous, definitely large for the area string section working on this show, but to really be able to give it that 1940s, 1950s, like golden age of cinema soundtrack swell. There's a lot of support coming from these synthesizers, which are meticulously programmed to not present the fact that they're synthesizers and to really just support everything that's live.
They're there to embroider, they're not to replace.
Absolutely, and certainly they cover all the piano and electric piano and organ content that exists in the show as well.
Now, someone mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Michael, mentioned earlier that this is not produced very often, and I'm beginning to hear why. Because it's just not
only
the grandeur of the what's on stage, but this is incredibly intricate.
It is, and what he's, I think musically, he just touched upon one of the reasons that is an expense that, is presented to a theater to be able to put four instruments like that into the orchestra.
It is, and they, there's a lot of there's a lot of struggle just in as the economy and the climate and the theater going community and that demographic evolves. It seems that there are more and more limited outlets and resources for theaters to go to that they can go, please work with us because we want to do this right, but just the bottom lines are preventing it. So I'm very grateful that they're in a situation where they are able to pull that off and give me, I mean, the players who I can take so little credit for the sound of the orchestra, and I don't mean it to be coy or overly modest or anything. The people who are playing down there in that pit for me are just, they're some of the most stellar musicians who I've ever had the opportunity of working with. Mm-hmm. And they understand, and they understand the material on such a story-driven level, mm-hmm. in addition to just playing the notes on the page, and they bring such character to every line. And that's, if I had to tell everyone to play this more like this, play this more like this, we'd never get anything done, and it would be a very pedestrian-sounding pit. But everyone is bringing such a wealth of interpretive opinion to the parts, in addition to just the facility to be able to read and play accurately.
Mm-hmm. Right. So not like an actor. I mean, they're bringing character.
It's another
the music
facet. Yeah.
Because you say if you had to do that, you obviously wouldn't want to. But also, if you had to do that, you'd have musicians that were blindly parroting, you know, whatever it was you said, rather than bring their own, you know, vibe, you know,
absolutely,
energy to it.
Wow. Absolutely. It. I can't say enough for working with people who want to be there.
Yeah.
And it's not just a job. Wow. That's. It's all the difference in the world.
What a wonderful thing to be performing. I'm speaking to Valerie now. I just switch it over. But to have all of that behind you, walking out there in this Norma Desmond role.
It's incredible. It's just an incredible feeling. Every night. And. You know, I know that David doesn't want it. Yeah, doesn't want to, like, you know, toot his horn or anything. But I have to say, as an actor on that stage, one of the best compliments that I can give David is that when I'm on stage, I don't worry about anything musically. He breathes with me, so that I can just perform the role and not have to be concerned with, oh my gosh, I have to count that, or, you know, everything is just right there. And it's a marriage of all of it, and the orchestra is a definite character in that.
Is that precision of two performers together, I always wonder, is that a precision that you're aware of, like a mathematical precision, or is it just a byproduct of the passion of performing? I mean, do you think about it, or does it just happen?
I think that, you know, when we're in rehearsals, we talk about what exactly we're trying to get across, and especially in something like this where it is all sung, so that it doesn't just become a musical passage, but there is some thought behind those words. And there are times in which David would say to me, you know, I know that it's written this way, but if you feel that you want to take a moment there, I'm right there with you. So that we have found certain spots where musically, if you look on the page, it goes right, you know, da 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 da. But the way David and I are doing it together, it's da 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 da. You know? So there's breath, and there's a wonderful sense of dramatic.
And a sense of oneness.
Absolutely.
Used to juggle with somebody and, you know, passing clubs. Mm-hmm. And we were astounded that I would be overcompensating for deficiencies that he had, and he would be doing the same before the clubs even left our hands.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So it was sort of that sense of just knowing, you know, where that other person is mentally during their performance.
Absolutely.
You know, and another lovely thing about David Paul is the fact that he comes from a very, very fine, very talented family. His mother is equally talented as a musician, as are his sister and his brother.
Indeed.
We're glorious singers and glorious actors.
His brother's missing a bass, though.
And he's kind of like the Lamoureux family, the Von Trapp family, the same comparison. They've all got this amazing talent. Oh, wow. And the father is a gentleman, and he does exactly...
He's the director of international students for Citrus College.
There you go.
But is very, very musically adept in his own right.
I know
not
that because
as
I sat next to him on opening night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, on the matinee on Sunday. I sat next to him. Yeah. And he was right there with you on every note. He was kind of conducting from the seat there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As all good fathers do.
As all good dads do. Yeah.
This is Sunset Boulevard we're talking about. This is at Musical Theater West. This is 4350 East 7th Street in Long Beach. That, of course, is the... Oh, no, I just gave the box office location, but it's the Richard and Karen Carpenter
Atherton is the address for the theater.
6200 yes. East Atherton.
And for tickets, this is playing through Sunday, July 28th. Tickets, musical.org, probably the easiest way to go, musical.org. We're at that time, Mike.
We are.
We have
baptized
5 minutes left in our broadcast here. We always like to ask our two guests to share... what would you say? On stage disasters,
it
mishaps?
It could be anything. It's whatever a memory that's
embarrassing
stuck out in your mind.
Moments.
Yeah.
Anything that happened during performance that you'd like to share?
Could be, it doesn't necessarily have to be contained to theater, but
sort of performance.
Film,
television.
Well, did you have another?
That's another show of ours.
That's another show. That's
no,
another
we're saying it doesn't have to be live theater. Could be film or television or something.
Just something that stands out. In
either one of you have a tale
hilarious.
To share?
Whatever.
Okay, well, all right, let's see. When I was doing Evita in Chicago, at one point in the show, I am sitting in front of a makeup mirror, and the character of Che is singing High Flying Adored. And I am in nothing but a little slip. And one performance, I turned around to sing... no one else can fill it like I can. And all of a sudden, people were standing up and they were walking out of the auditorium, out of the theater.
What?
It was the Schubert. And I thought, oh my gosh, where's everybody going? And then all of a sudden, there was this announcement that said, ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. There is nothing to worry about. The fire in the trash has been contained. And so, and there I was sitting there in this slip, and the lights had come up, and I became very self-conscious all of a sudden because I wasn't a character anymore. I was like Valerie sitting in a slip. And so the lights then came back down, and people started filtering in. And I always, I had to get my note like, all the time just out of the air for, I don't really think I need, for Rainbow High. Couldn't remember the name of it for a second. I had to sing the first verse. And so it was always, you know, right there. I would get it from the last note that I sang. But in this particular case, I went up there, and the conductor was so sweet. And he, you know, pointed to the pianist who, like, clunked my note, ding, you know. And it was like, oh, my God. You know? So I had to, like, go on with it. And it was kind of embarrassing, but it was fun.
Oh, man. I tell you, you don't know when you're on stage.
Yeah. What?
You never know when
you're
on stage.
Well, that's the beauty
of theater.
There's never two performances alike.
You only need to look at the design of a theater to see where the actor falls on the totem pole, because that fire curtain drops down, saves the audience, turns the stage into a chimney, but
right,
saves the audience.
Save yeah.
What about you, David?
David.
You
have
one to share?
Well, from very recent memory, just what jumps to mind, I was working on a project, and it didn't become clear until getting into the space that for this one particular song, which was by far the least melodious and least easy to grab onto song by both myself and the performers, it was kind of out of place in this show, but didn't realize until we got to, I think, the night before opening, that these two gentlemen who were on a second level of a set looking down at me, they had positioned some effects light right in front of my face that was pointing up to them, blinding them from seeing me on a number that was dependent on them seeing me. So we were trying to negotiate this light. It wasn't working out. And someone presented, well, why don't you conduct with a glow stick? And I said, yeah, that sounds like that might work. And it was just a disaster. So I put my baton down, and I'm conducting with this glow stick and leaning like 3 feet off the conductor podium and like kind of trying to hold onto the wall for balance, but no one in the pit can see the glow stick. And within the first like 8 bars of the vocal for this song, it's just the orchestra doesn't move on because they can't see the glow stick. They're sitting in a vamp. This guy's singing. I'm trying to whisper, call out measure numbers. And I don't like being panicked, and I like being prepared to a point that that doesn't happen. But this was one of those where it just hit a point where I was, like, not moving my arms and completely helpless, and the orchestra fixed it. Like, the orchestra somehow was just like, and there we are in the song.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful for that, but definitely coming out of that song, and I think it was opening night of this project too, it was just the most mortifying experience.
I have flop sweat just hearing that story.
Right?
I'm just like, meow, 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 take me to my happy place. I'm just so panicked. Oh, man.
Wow, wow. There you
go.
What a joy it's been to have both of you with Paul and I today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
It was a lot of fun. And we actually have a little something we're going to play off the air. We have a little bit of the overture of Sunset Boulevard that we're going to play off the air. So thank you both.
Terrific.
So nice to
indeed.
Have you both.
Come back and see us anytime you like.
Good time.
Thank you so
always
much.
Always nice to work with you, Paul. Of
always
course.
Nice. Thank you so much.
Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
See you on the radio.
Listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.